Ladies and gentlemen, I call to order this regular session of the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors. We'll begin with the Pledge of Allegiance, followed by a moment of silence.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. Before I go any further, I'd just like to say I have no idea how y'all worked it out, but I'm glad I actually got a chair with arms and back. Usually I end up with the short stick and I've got the chair sitting behind me. All right. Next thing we're going to do is adoption of the agenda.
So moved.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Mr. Booker. All in favor? Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Next will be a special presentation. Vaco Longevity Award. Mr. Dahl.
So, Supervisors and Mr. Weaver, could you please come up to the front here? So Vaco is issuing the Longevity Award, Virginia Association of Counties. We would like to recognize Supervisor Donald Weaver for his many years of outstanding service to Fluvanna County. Supervisor Weaver was elected as the Cunningham District Supervisor in November 1989, sworn in on January 1, 1990, and continues to serve the constituents of the Cunningham District today. Over the last 30 years, Mr. Weaver has represented the people of the Cunningham District with steadfastness and integrity, and we want to thank him today for his contributions to Fluvanna County. And we're presenting him today with the Virginia Association of Counties Supervisor Service Award. This award celebrates those with 30 years of dedicated service to county government. On behalf of Fluvanna County, we want to thank and congratulate Supervisor Donald Weaver for his many past years of service as well as years to come. Mr. Weaver.
Very nice.
Well, the other part is not brought into.
Someone wanted to know whether it was 1890.
How many years were you on the school board before?
8 years on the school board.
So it's been 38. Yeah.
They're hard up, you know.
What was the answer to that question?
Good job.
Okay. And Lord, if you want to say right, we have one more presentation as well. And I'm not sure if we need to go, let's go back because I think we've got to approve something first and then we'll come back. I'm sorry. Sorry.
That's okay. We need to exercise.
I didn't know.
The dog pen attacked me tonight. I gotta go. What's the heck been going on at that meeting? All right. Next is special action item and presentation. Proclamation celebrating Lake Monticello's 50th anniversary. Mr. Dahl.
All right. So first, we'd like to, one, give a special presentation to Lake Monticello for celebrating the 50th anniversary. But also, before we do so, there's a proclamation to approve by the board before we get to the special presentation. So let me go and just do the proclamation right here. And I'll read this proclamation once I have the general manager and the board of Lake Monticello Owners Association come up with the board. So this is the proclamation right here.
Put the motion back up there and
we'll do
that. Mr. O'Brien.
I move to approve the proclamation celebrating the 50th anniversary of Lake Monticello.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Seeger. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0.
Now we can come on up front.
I'm getting my steps, getting more steps in right here, I'm telling you.
Yes.
Oh, I didn't
know. No, that's all right. So if we can have the general manager and the board of the Lake Monticello Owners Association come up here, please.
Go ahead.
Come on up in here. Y'all stand up in the middle. I'll stand up here on the side.
Okay, so we have proclamation 06-2019, proclamation celebrating Lake Monticello's 50th anniversary. Whereas Lake Monticello is a gated community in Fluvanna County, Virginia, featuring over 3,500 acres of home sites and open space, accentuated by a 352-acre recreational lake and 18-hole PGA championship golf course. And whereas Lake Monticello was first conceived by a group of local businessmen in 1958, and as a recreational community with 13 miles from Charlottesville. And whereas in 1967, plans for the community began taking shape, with laying out the lots, contouring of the lake, construction of the dam, and golf course. And whereas Lake Monticello's main lake was formed by damming a short tributary of the Rivanna River, with county lore postulating that Hurricane Camille filled the lake overnight in August 1969. And whereas the 3,500-acre community now provides amenities such as marina, boat launches, picnic areas, tennis, basketball courts, a swimming pool, playgrounds with picnic facilities, a softball field, and a clubhouse, 5 beaches, fishing, water skiing, boating, and swimming. And whereas Lake Monticello is noted for its semi-private 18-hole, 72-par PGA Championship golf course, whereas originally created in the 1969 as a summer vacation home destination, Lake Monticello has become an ideal community for commuters and retirees. Now, therefore, the Fluvanna Board of Supervisors does hereby proclaim and celebrate the 50th anniversary of Lake Monticello community on the 16th day of October 2019.
You are.
Thank you.
Well, just a quick word is just to say that I think that it goes without saying that the vibrancy and diversity that the lake has brought to Fluvanna has only added to its richness as a community. And I know that working both inside the lake and outside the lake, that I love the mix of everything that we have, and I appreciate all the efforts of the board and the hard work that you all have done to make the lake an even better place and to bring it into the community even more. So congratulations on your 50th
anniversary. Thank you. We do appreciate it.
Thank you all so much.
Can we put us all in the same frame? I'm sorry. I just would like to do this for
the
camera.
Absolutely.
Here, you hold that. You get in there, baby. There we go.
Thank you.
Sure.
Send them to Judy Fish.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you, so
thank you very much. Good to see you, Chris. How you doing?
Thanks, Tony.
You're welcome.
Appreciate that.
Getting steps in time, you'll go home. All right. Now, having done that, we'll move forward with the county administrator's report.
So I promise no more pictures coming up front and no more moving to the front.
Yeah.
So I'll try and be quick here with the county administrator's report. So just a couple things under some community recognitions. The county would like to recognize CBEC for helping Parks and Rec. The Carriersburg baseball field had 4 lights go out last week. CBEC allowed 2 of their linemen, Jeff Johnson and Alan Thacker, a time on October 10th to do some community service and replace the bulbs. Replacing bulbs for the county requires a 60-foot ladder truck, bucket truck. We don't have that, so CDEC was nice enough to let us utilize some of their resources and their manpower to come out and help us with that. So great job with CDEC, and they're a great partner with a lot that we do. The spotlight on business today, as you all know, you had some great barbecue from Wahoo Barbecue tonight, so our spotlight on business is Wahoo Barbecue. The business contact is Howie Brown. A little bit about them, Wahoo Barbecue just opened up last Friday, October 11th, and they're going to be a barbecue joint with a country storefront, and they're in the old Cunningham Market there right on Route 53. So, you know, you had a chance to try their barbecue, and you had a chance to approve the special use permit, so they're in the business community, and they're looking to do great things for us. So.
And if you're going, you better get there early.
You better get there early, yes. They've upped their quantities. Just a few announcements and updates. So join Fluvanna County for the 15th annual Halloween Festival. So on Friday, October 25th, from 5 to 8:30 at the Fluvanna County Library, there's going to be arts and crafts, magic show, movie, and free popcorn, which is always the best. Then also on Saturday, October 26th, from 6 to 8:30 at Pleasant Grove, at the Pleasant Grove Pole Barn, they're going to have semi-scary hay rides, crafts and games, costume contests, four different age groups, and they're judging at 7:30. And then there's going to be a jack-o'-lantern contest also with judging at 8 p.m. And one other bid for Halloween festivities. On Thursday, October 31st, from 5:30 to 7 p.m., they're going to have the Trunk or Treat in the village here in Palmyra. That's hosted again this year by Fluvanna Circuit Court and Company One, which is the Palmyra Fire Department. They're going to have that out in the Heritage Trail parking lot, basically the parking lot right out here across from the courthouse. There's going to be a parade after the trunk or treat in the parking lot at 7 p.m., and then there'll be a costume contest to follow on the historic courthouse steps after that. So, again, lots of good Halloween festivities in the kind of the town of Palmyra and kind of that the county's putting on.
You know, the nursing facility Envoy also, they have tons of kids to come, and the elderly people, they're out in the hallway, and the community provides the candy, and that's real popular too. And I think it's the 30th. It's in my calendar, not the 31st.
And one thing, as you may have seen, no, this is not a UFO or some type of weird-looking silo. So the Zion's Crossroads Elevated Storage Tank construction is underway. You can see they're halfway completed with the big the bulb part of the elevated storage tank. And later on, we're going to be priming the board to come up with a color for this tank, too. So you can see we're well underway. A few items of direction from the board. So as you heard, we had the extension dinner and the 4-H program. So Holiday Lake 4-H, they have an educational center there. So when Ms. Mayo was talking about, you know, the kids go there for the summer program, they had sixth graders that go out there. It's just a big recreation facility. It's actually a 20,000 acre state forest. And what they're looking for county support for the counties that take part in the program there. They're asking for support from Albemarle, Amherst, Appomattox, Amelia, Brunswick, Buckingham, Campbell, Charlotte, Cumberland, Fluvanna, Green, Louisa, and there's probably about six others on that list. They're looking for a resolution from the board. They want to request funding of $332,000 from the Commonwealth, not from Fluvanna County, but of the Commonwealth, to do some upgrades to the facilities out there, medical clinic, PA system, ADA improvements, generator. So what they're looking for a resolution of support from Fluvanna County, and if the board wants me to put that on the next agenda, I would be so inclined to do so. With that, getting that on the next agenda. Also, obviously, as you know, we've been extremely dry lately. So there's been some counties that have done burn prohibitions or burn bans. Without getting too far into that, what county staff has done, we've kind of did a little public information I don't want to say campaign, but we put some information on the website through fan mail, just kind of letting citizens know, you know, the risk of wildfire risk with it being so dry. And then also, as you remember too, October 15th through November 30th is the start of fall wildfire season in Virginia. So I'm just kind of looking for some direction from the board. Either we just kind of keep it as is, and it just so happens, of course, when I'm bringing this up, we get rain today, the first rain that we've had in quite some time. And I think we've probably got about 4 days of dry weather, and then next week we may have some more rain. But if you look at this map right here, if you look at the map right there, I know it's kind of hard to see, but obviously we're right there. There's 39 localities in the Commonwealth that have already done some type of burn prohibition or burn ban. A burn prohibition is basically just some support from the board issuing a news release, just kind of urging citizens not to do anything. What county staff has done so far is just more of an information thing from our standpoint, just kind of making citizens aware. And some localities have actually done burn bans themselves. I have 39 localities. I think some of these 39 localities fall under burn prohibition, because I know, for instance, Louisa County is in red on this map, but they've actually done a burn prohibition and not a burn ban. So I'll let Mr. Payne speak on a burn ban if that's something that the board wanted to do. That would have a little more teeth behind it. If the county issued some type of burn ban, you know, it would require some resources from the sheriff's department if we wanted to have to, you know, monitor it and just put enforcement on it. So I just wanted to bring it to the board's attention. The governor just issued a statewide drought watch advisory. So obviously the rivers are low, there's dry conditions, but of course today we had some rain, so, you know, go figure.
Yeah, at our place we got 9/10 of an inch. And then if we get some in another week, it seems to me that we're starting to get better anyway.
That's the hope anyway. So like I said, I was just looking for a direction of the board. We can either just kind of stay status quo as it is or do something more.
If we do anything, I'd be for the prohibition. I see we got two. I'm getting nods from the chiefs. The prohibition, I think, would just be, just get it out there. Please don't burn.
Well, so the prohibition would be more so having some type of formal information from the board if you want to do that, or we can just keep it as is. We've got information on the website, just kind of urging folks not
I'd
to.
I'd say we just leave it as is then.
It's so funny every time I think of it, because 2 days ago, my son out there just burning. And I'm hauling, it's a drought, it's dry, put those fires out. I thought I'd have to call Fork Union.
Well, trust me, this morning we were, yeah. It was raining like crazy, and I was caught myself standing there at the back window of the gym every once in a while, just looking out and going, hey, it's a mud hole right there, man. I ain't seen one ever in a while. And then we get a brush fire call. And it was a controlled burn. Somebody was waiting for it to rain before they set it on fire.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It was all right then.
It was fine, yeah. Yes, sir. But it came in and somebody drove by and went, oh my God.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. I think we'll keep it as ours.
Keep it as ours.
I'm abandoning it.
Chief, can I get a nod?
I'm abandoning it. I
don't think
we need. Just keep in mind that if we're not here at future meetings, if you go to the ban, unless the state does the ban, forestry, Department of Forestry will not enforce it. It falls on the sheriff's office. So you would have to talk to the sheriff and his command staff to see if they could even handle the extra load.
Well, man, he got broad shoulders.
So anyway, we'll keep it status quo, but we just want to bring it up to the board.
Thank you so much.
And just remember, the next Board of Supervisors meeting, Wednesday, November 6th, we have a 4 p.m. regular meeting. Wednesday, November 20th, again, you get fed a great dinner. We have the Interagency Council dinner for the BOS at 5:30, and then we have a 7 p.m. regular meeting. And then December 4th, we have a 4 p.m. regular meeting, and I could answer any questions from the board.
Any questions? Thank you very much. We do appreciate it. All right, we'll now open our first round of public comments. Anyone wish to discuss anything with the board, please step to the witness chair, state your name and address, keep your time comments to 5 minutes on topic and direct it to the board. Is there anyone wishing to speak at this time? Seeing none, I will now close the first round of public comment. We will now go to our public hearing. B, SUP 1908, Jessica Gahan, K9 Life LLC, Mr. Robinson.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Before I get started, I just wanted to see if any of you all have a hard copy of the applicant's business plan. It is in your packet, but I have hard copies if you would like one. So this is a special use permit application, SUP 1908, from Jessica Gann.
You go ahead. Sorry.
This is a special use permit request to establish a commercial kennel on property that is identified as tax map 5A54. That property is in the Zions Crossroads area. And as I mentioned, they are proposing a commercial kennel, which is defined in our ordinance as a place designed and used to house, board, breed, handle, or otherwise keep or care for dogs, cats, or other household pets for the specific intent of sale or in return for compensation. Note the key here with this definition is the intent of sale or compensation. That is what classifies this as a commercial kennel. And while that definition speaks of other animals, I'll specify that the applicant is only proposing dogs for this kennel. She's proposing to offer dog daycare, training, classes, and boarding. During daytime hours, there could be up to 30 dogs on the premises, possibly a few more like when classes are going on. And then overnight, she has the ability to accommodate 22 dogs total. So before I go further, this is the location of the project within Fluvanna County. It's based on the Crossroads. And this is an aerial of the site as it exists. You can see it's currently developed with an existing building. The applicant is not proposing to construct anything. The building is already on site for her use. And I'll point out with this aerial, you'll see there's development over here to the left. That is the Starlight Business Park. So the project is in close proximity to other business and industrial uses. This is the applicant's site plan. The drawing on the left just is all very similar, just showing an aerial view of the property. And as you can see here, she's proposing to sort of close in a fence that's in the rear yard. That'll be the primary change that'll be made to the property. And then on the right-hand side is a footprint of the area of the building that she'll be using. And I'll mention that there are two sections to this building. I'll show you that in the photographs following. One section of the building that's here on the screen was originally a dwelling and is still being used as residential. And then this is the commercial portion of the building where the kennel will be located. And that is what this footprint is showing here. So this is the entrance into Starlight Business Park along Route 15 in here. And the subject building is right here at the entrance on the corner at 15 in Starlight Park. And then this just shows traveling further into the site, you can see the close proximity of the other businesses in Starlight Park. And again, the subject property is here. And this photograph shows more clearly the two sections of the building I was talking about earlier. This is the section that was originally a dwelling and will still be used as a dwelling. And this is the commercial portion here where the kennel will be located. And this is the rear yard which will be used as a run or exercise area for the dogs. As I mentioned earlier, the primary change she'll be making is bringing this fence out and kind of closing it in with the one here in the foreground. So to conclude, this is a special use permit request for a commercial kennel. It'll use an existing vacant building that is already its own business. This project appears to meet all of our requirements. And I'll mention that on their meeting on October the 8th, the Planning Commission did recommend approval of this special use permit by a vote of 5-0 with conditions that are listed in the staff report. The primary impacts of this application on this property would be traffic to the site. So that concludes my presentation. The applicant, Ms. Gann, is present, and the property owner is present as well, Mr. Watson.
Are there any questions from the board? Thank you very much, Ms. Gann.
Yes, sir.
Okay, do we have any questions for Ms. Gann? Is there anything you'd like to say to us?
No.
You don't have to.
No
you don't have a speech?
I saw where you had overnight. Will you be able to keep a dog for more than one, like if someone go on a vacation for a week?
Yes, ma'am. I actually have pictures of the rooms that I'm starting to build on the inside. So right. You're more than welcome to look at.
Where do you put your dogs for timeout? I thought that was you. I put them in timeout.
So what they do is if they're actually barking with a whole bunch of other dogs, they actually get timed out, which means they just get removed from the play group. Right. So they actually go into the daycare area or even into the bathroom for 30 to 45 seconds.
Right.
And then after they stop whining, clawing at the door, they're allowed to come back out. They do it again, right back in.
Good.
Mm-hmm. And you said it doesn't take very long for them to learn.
I have five pups that play well together that you don't hear growling or anything else either.
That's great.
And are you living in the property right beside it?
I am.
Okay.
You have a whole lot of training too.
Yes, ma'am.
Is that another house sort of beside there?
It is actually a house.
It is, and you're converting that into divisions for the dogs?
No. That's
nice. It's
yeah.
Yes, but the other building,
it's
yes.
The other.
Yes, okay. It's the other one, the one that's actually, like if you're looking at the picture on the left, the straighter one is actually the facility.
And the primary intent is boarding?
Primary intent is, yes, boarding and also training and training classes. Okay.
But not really selling animals.
No.
All righty. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All righty. At this time, we will now open the public hearing. Please keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and direct it to the board. Is there anyone wish to speak at this time? Seeing none, we'll now close the public comment. Board, do we have any questions?
I've seen this on the TRC and also at the Planning Commission, and I think it's a great business for Flavanna County. It's in a very good place. Mm-hmm. It's a
very good location.
Right. Close to the... So if it's okay with you, I'd like to make the
yes,
motion.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
That's it. I should say I move to approve.
Okay. I move to approve SUP 1805, a request to increase maximum gross residential density above 2.9 units per acre with respect to, this isn't right.
That's a wrong.
Oh, that's wrong motion.
Yeah, wrong one.
What about the one? Let's hear. Let me go to the link here, so
let me just read it from here.
Here we go. Let's just
go. I move that the Board of Supervisors approve SUP 1908, a request to establish a commercial kennel with respect to 1.27 acres of Tax Map 5, Section A, Parcel 54, subject to the 9 conditions listed in the staff report.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Eager and seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Next is C, ZTA 1903, Sycamore Square, Lot 114, Vacation. That's my vacation home again. Mr. Miles.
Yes, good evening, Chairman Sheridan and members of the board. I'll be doing the planning presentation of this request, and Mr. Payne will follow up with some legal comments for you.
Okay. There you go. All right.
A little background on this. On October 2nd, 2002, the board at the time approved a rezoning case, ZMP 0201, and included the proffer that's listed in the center, proffer 7. The site will be donated to Flavanna County for a future branch library or additional uses as determined necessary. The site located, as illustrated on the plat, which I'll show you shortly, will be no more than 60,000 square feet. At this time, you all, according to Mr. Payne and staff, the Board of Supervisors determined there's no need for this. As you all know, we have a library down the road here. Since that time that this case was approved, Lot 114 is proposed to revert back or become part of the common area of that development, Sycamore Square Property Owners Association. And just to orientate you and the public, this is the star in the center is the parcel in question, Lot 114. see towards the center top part of the slide, South Boston Road, and then the retail store, CVS, Dollar General, at the entrance there. So this parcel in the center is what was originally the donation site. So this proposed ordinance of vacation and quitclaim deed that's in your package would vacate the dedication to the public use of Lot 114, Sycamore Square subdivision. And as shown in the notation of the plat we just looked at, and then duly recorded here in the building. The Planning Commission, back on October 8th, did recommend approval 3-1. Ms. Murray Key was wearing her long-term planning hat, wanted to see if we would be able to utilize this long-term in the CIP planning process. Other than that, we didn't have any other public comments, and it's time to turn it over to Mr. Payne.
Mr. Chairman, you all discussed this in introductory form. Mr. Nichols actually initiated this for your consideration. The problem is that we had a dedication which was designed for a library or other uses, and it's clear that we need another library because we have a relatively new one, and the board will recall you talked about possible other uses for it, and the consensus, as I recall, was that there wasn't any foreseeable need for this property. Its best use would be for recreational and open space for the subdivision. This is a little unusual procedure. It follows, it's designed to follow the applicable statute, which is Virginia Code 15.2-2272, where a dedication is, where a subdivision is approved and recorded, and there's a need to change it in some fashion. In this case, it's to eliminate the vacation to public, to vacate the dedication to public use, restore it to private ownership. That's what this ordinance is designed to do. Now, it's a little more complicated than just that. The reason for that is that by the general terms of the statute, once you vacate something that's been dedicated to public use as part of the subdivision, and it's vacated, the property reverts to the dedicator, which is the subdivider. In this case, the subdivider has completed the subdivision, is no longer involved in the subdivision. This particular subdivider still exists in Blue Mountain County, and what we have done is designed this so that not only would you have this vacation, ordinance of vacation, but it would be followed up with a quitclaim deed, which would have the benefit of making yet more clear the record and making clear that the subdivider is not claiming any interest in this property. So it clears up the title of the property in the owner association. I have met with Mr. Dahl, and I met with the board of the owners association. They were perfectly happy with it. I've discussed this with the subdivider. They're perfectly happy with it. So all this does is restore this property to private ownership.
Does it sort of go back to the subdivision?
Yes. It's specifically required to cease to be a separate lot and becomes part of the open space for the subdivision.
Did we have some legal problems in the past with this?
Not this property.
No, I'm thinking something else.
Yeah, I think you are, because I don't think we've had any problem with this. It just didn't. It wasn't consummated for what it was originally contemplated for. And by the way, just in case it comes up in your mind, this profit condition remains on the property, and you are making it, if you approve this ordinance, you will be making a determination that the return of this property to be part of the open space for this property is consistent with that profit. So if somebody asked, are we removing the property? The answer is no. You you're determining that it's good, that they have satisfied the condition by doing this.
Do we, in theory, have any reason or responsibility to try to sell it so that there's a return to the taxpayers on this or not?
Do you have a responsibility for
yeah.
it? I don't know that you have a particular responsibility other than your general fiduciary responsibility. That's what the public hearing is for, to ensure that, that all this is done in a transparent fashion. But it will restore this to the private sector ownership of the owners association.
And I don't know if we, for instance, if we wanted to sell it to the owners association, I'm not sure if they would be interested in that, and I'm not sure if Mr. Payne can speak on that.
My guess is that they probably wouldn't, and the reason for that is they already have the benefit of it as being open, unoccupied open space. They have actually been maintaining it, and clearly they've been using it for, I don't know what they use it for, but you know, a playground or dog walking or whatever it might be. And I would anticipate they'd continue to do that. So it makes it, to my mind, much cleaner to have them own it and be responsible for it so they can insure it and that kind of thing. But in terms of the immediate use of it, it shouldn't make any difference. If they choose to improve the property, you know, put swing sets on it or whatever it might be, they could go ahead and do that. But it would be, again, recreational.
Mr. Moss, did you say something about Jaquita Mary Key had a, did she object?
No, she wasn't objecting, ma'am. She was in support of what you all were doing. She was just, she knew it was going to pass, and she just felt, as we go into the rewrite of the comp plan, she wanted to look into options for when there is land that's available for county use.
But the answer to that, I don't think she approved it.
Yeah, that's what I
think. Yeah, no, she voted. Zero. She voted nay. It was 3-1.
It was a nay.
Correct. She but she made it clear to Chairman Bibb that she was in support of having this be vacated, but she was just trying to look at an option. Mm-hmm. And she's asked the school board to also be able to tour some of the things for CIP. So it was kind of along the lines of that. That's what was going on that night.
One of the questions that she brought up was, you know, how do we know we don't need this later on down the road? That was one thing that she brought up, and I think that was maybe the reason that she voted against
it. It was a philosophical vote. She was in support of you all. Us returning it, it's no longer a liability or something that the county owns or has or any responsibility as going to the record.
This is not first time you've ever done this. One notable time that you did this before was with the property on Lake Monticello Road, on the west side of Lake Monticello Road, that was originally designed for a school site back in the 60s, and it was never developed. And as I recall, it was probably impossible, certainly impracticable to build a school on because it wasn't big enough. And what you ended up doing with it is you traded that property for some other property that the owners associate, Lake Monticello Owners Association owned and conveyed that out. So this is not dissimilar to that.
Mm-hmm. Probably that riverfront property that we have over there.
One other minor issue, this is numbered CTA, which is Zoning Text Amendment. This is not technically a zoning text amendment. This is actually done pursuant to the subdivision ordinance, but the procedures are specified the same as if it were a zoning amendment. So don't let there be any confusion about that.
Was there any consideration for potentially using the property for, say, like a Boys and Girls Club or something like that?
For what?
For, say, a Boys and Girls Club.
From the county standpoint?
Yeah, from just, I mean, have we pursued and said, you know, here's an opportunity. I mean, that's kind of a nice area. You got a lot of people that live there, a lot of young people that live in that area. We've got a sidewalk there now. We've got, you know, a crosswalk. So the potential to use it as a, you know, Boys and Girls Club or something along those lines that benefits the community.
Well, if it wasn't used for a, it was proffered as a library, but if the board would it have to be used for some other civic use?
That, it's your determination. If you don't want to vacate it, you don't have to.
Now, my comment to that would be that if we were to put one there, we're putting that next to the amenities that already exist.
It would benefit.
I mean, it would benefit that area, but it would be really tough for everybody else. I mean, to me, I'd look to put one of those possible.
Well, and usually they make the determination. I'm just wondering whether we look to see, you know, whether some other group like that that could serve the community would be interested in that land is really, did we do anything beyond just sort of say?
No, I mean, you remember Mr. Nichols brought this up to the board, back in probably April, I'm thinking, May, May time frame. And then it was the board's, you know, overall consideration to go ahead and, you know, give the property back at that time to the owners association. So that's kind of where we are today.
So the answer to your question is, it's up to you.
All right, any other questions?
Well, I don't know.
Guess we have the public hearing first.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Okay, hearing none, we will now open the public comments. Please keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and direct it to the board. Hey, young lady.
Hello. My name is Linda Sager, and I live at 2949 Ridge Road in Palmyra. And as some of you may know, I am working on many community projects, one of which is a farmers and artisans cooperative. This type of land that would be owned by the public would be an ideal place to hold such a market. Now the farmers market at Pleasant Grove is not very well attended, and there are not many vendors because it's remote from population areas. If it's possible, when someone develops and makes a proffer to the county for a certain use, and then that property becomes property of the county, if you have the option of using it for some other purpose in the future, then I would encourage you to keep the property. It may not be that you consider it for the use that I've just mentioned, although it would be ideal for that, but if there is some other use down the line, buying property for the county is very expensive, and if you have this property already, I would urge you to keep it.
Thank you, ma'am. Is there anyone else wishing to speak at this time?
Yes. Kathy Swenson Miller, 94 Fairview Lane, and I'm part of the same project with Dr. Linda Stager. And I guess the only other consideration is that this piece of property is close to some of the higher density population within the county, so it potentially could be valuable for future use.
Good evening.
Good evening.
James Kelly, 363 Manor Boulevard, Palmyra, Virginia. And I am not associated with the project that Dr. Swenson Miller and Dr. Stager are working on. But as you had this conversation, I did have the same thought as Mr. O'Brien. In terms of having a public good that could be of use, not necessarily having a use for it at this moment per the exact proffer, but you do have a public good, and it seems that if there isn't a compelling reason to turn it over to private use in the meantime, holding on to the public good so it can be used for the public good in the future seems like a reasonable and kind of conservative approach. So I urge you to hold the property, and I'm convinced that as we continue to grow and have future demands, that this might be an asset that you guys can employ for those purposes. So, thank you.
Is there anyone else? I'll now close the public hearing. Alrighty, are there any questions or concerns or comments?
Well, do we have a picture of where the property is?
We
As you pull in.
I want to see that. I just want to see it on the screen.
Yeah.
Property knows, just the plan.
I don't want to see it. I know where Sycamore and all that is.
Well, is that you?
Yeah, I saw.
Is it four-way stop sign? It says to your left. If I'm sitting at the four-way.
Is this CVS right here?
It says right there to my left where the retention pond is.
So CVS is right here, Dollar General's right here, so it's.
Isn't there a retention pond down there?
Yeah, when you, that's correct, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Black and I walked the property a couple weeks ago.
And how large is it?
A little over an acre.
Little over an acre, 1.25.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a retention pond for this development.
So here it is, right there.
Yeah, that's located just to east of there. And then the townhouses are where it says commercial.
Townhouses would be right here.
Yeah, right.
The CVS is here.
The light right there to where it's more traffic.
And as Mr. Brian said, there is an improved sidewalk that's located there. And then as you go back into the project, it's single-family homes that are in the rear of the property.
Those are townhomes to the right as well.
And there's additional townhouses on the front edge.
Across from?
Yes.
To the south?
On the south side.
Does the county have own or have rights to any other property surrounding that density area?
We have the land down next to the river, but we couldn't put anything down there.
No, we've got a small piece of land that we talked about in Fort Union that's vacant right on 15. We have, but no, near that density.
Yeah, I mean, I would venture to say that probably maybe 35 to 40% of the young population of Corvana, high school and under, probably live near that area. It's accessible to them.
Yeah.
It seems like maybe we have not explored how this property could be used. Maybe it'd be appropriate for a Savannah Leadership Development project or maybe the parks program to look at it and say, how can we better employ this? I think we're doing a disservice to citizens by not exploring better public use for that. And I get that we haven't done anything, but I don't think we've explored it very much at this point in time.
Mr. Brian, from the staff's perspective, Mr. Black and I went out, and generally, when you're dealing with like CVS and the Dollar General sites, you're usually at a 2 minimum to 3 acre sites for CVS's the different types of sheets or anything like that. The parking that would be demanding in limited amounts for this at certain times of use, it's not available. The footprint of a building would be very small. It'd almost be like a pavilion. So from a site design, from the zoning ordinance perspective, you'd be immediately going vertical with parking to be able to meet the parking requirements from that perspective.
And it could be a park. I mean, I'm not saying it has to be something like
right.
that, but it could be just a park. Again,
right.
I just don't feel like, I think we're looking for reasons to say no rather than reasons to say, let me rephrase that, reasons to say we don't need this rather than reasons to say here's how we could use it. And I feel like we haven't explored those reasons.
But I think that the idea of using it for a farmer's stand or art gathering is a great idea because of the population that is there, and they don't have to drive down to Pleasant Grove. And that doesn't mean that the county has to.
Doesn't mean it. But.
But
the HOA can utilize the facility, lease it to.
Sure, but we have no guidance or ability to make them do it that way.
But they can always use it to people around there, irregardless if the county keeps it.
They're currently using it as we speak.
Yeah,
correct.
Well, they're using it and they're maintaining it.
And they're maintaining
it. Our Parks and Rec staff isn't maintaining it.
I just think deferring this and letting some of groups like FLDP to come back to the board and to say, yeah, we looked at this, we think it's got this potential use, or no, it doesn't. That doesn't harm the board, it doesn't harm the association at this point in time because they're using it as just more information. It would probably fulfill sort of our due diligence there.
And it really wouldn't affect our taxes because we wouldn't get any more taxes because the open space is taxed by the homes, not the open space itself. So I think that I agree with you, Tony.
All right, well, In that case, let's...
Do we defer or deny at this point in time? If we deny, it's a year, is that correct? If we defer?
Well, I don't think that rule applies to
the applicant's instance.
Where are our applicants? If you're contemplating just getting more information, it would be more appropriate to defer it.
Okay, do we have a motion?
I move the Board of Supervisors defer, unless, is there more discussion at this point in time?
I don't think there is.
I move that the Board of Supervisors defer an ordinance to vacate the dedication to public use of certain subdivision plat with respect to lot 114 of Sycamore Square subdivision.
I suggest you put some kind of time frame on it.
6 months?
I want to make it a year.
A year.
Because the FLDP goes on until next year.
Right, it won't start.
Okay. For 1 year.
Second.
And I'll second that.
You got 2 seconds.
I'm all over my dog, just covering me up. Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Booker, and then re-seconded by Ms. Eager. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. All right, we'll now move forward to action matters. The authorization, D, authorization to advertise to hold a public hearing on ordinance amendment of Code Chapter 8, Section 8-1. Ms. Smith.
I'll Ms. Smith chime in, and then I can chime in, and then Mr. Payne can chime in, too.
All right, just remember, we got a long night ahead.
We'll try and keep it quick.
It'll be quick. Just asking that we can advertise. This is one of the things that we have to get done by November 30th for the Office of OEMS.
For the what?
For the office.
The subject matter of this is that you have an ordinance that recognizes the various fire companies and authorizes them to go forward. But the authorization that's currently in the ordinance does not authorize the fire companies to provide EMS services. And this amendment would do that. It's been vetted by OEMS. So it seems to me that it straightens out.
It's something they're asking us to do. We're dotting our I's and crossing our T's.
We have an ordinance, but they needed some more specific language in there that addresses EMS.
And just to address the problem with reporting.
It doesn't fix that one. No,
but it's another issue.
This is an issue that we had.
Correct.
As a county.
Yes.
Not this doesn't have anything to do with fire. This is us.
Okay. Yeah. This is different.
Any other questions? Mm-hmm. Do we have a motion?
Authorize staff to advertise a public hearing to be held on November 20, 2019, in order to receive public comment on a proposed amendment of Chapter 8 of the Savannah County Code.
Second. Motion made by Ms. Booker and seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Thank you very much. Next is E. CRA Project Agreement Number 3, Fork Union Fire Training Building, Bidding and Construction Administration. Ms. Tolle.
Chair, good evening. We're going to talk about the project agreement for the burn building for the services from the architect. However, first I'm going to give you an update on the project. We just Monday got the final designs and price estimates from the architect and engineers. That's a rendering provided by them. It's a beautiful building. The next step to get would be to get approval from fire programs to move forward. As far as pricing goes, our new estimates are $954,544, according to the architect. And there's a couple of reasons why the price tag is so high. First of all, you should know that does not include any of the site prep, does not include the temperature control system either, so that would be an addition to that cost. We had originally, in August, received a ballpark from CRA at $675,000. The committee, the burn building committee, got together and decided that it had been discussed before, the architect had missed it when he did the original plans, was doing a concrete roof. The committee decided it would be much safer than having a wooden roof on top of the burn building, especially when you get multiple people up there. Equipment and so on. So they asked for the architect to go back and redo the plans with the concrete poured roof. In addition to that additional cost, costs went up for the steel that was required to support the concrete roof. There's also an unusually high increase in construction costs in the area in the last few months, so that also raised his estimates. And that's where we're at with the cost.
Ms. Toller, do you remember when we kind of started this project? What was the original estimate back then when we started this? Like when we got some of the first bids?
When we put it out originally for bids, we got one bid back and it was well over $1 million. I want to say it was close to 1.2. So it's still a significant decrease, although we were expecting a much more significant decrease by doing it this way. Unfortunately, you know, that's just where we stand with it.
It never gets back, does it?
No. Now, as far as the project agreement, as part of the grant that we got from VDFP, we get $30,000 strictly for engineering. We have already spent that. We've already spent $44,860 for A&E services. This agreement to do the construction administration and bidding services would be an additional $7,120 that the county would be responsible for.
So let me just touch on this. So what this motion is, go back to it.
Just paying that extra $7,000.
Well, yes, what this is, though, this is for bidding services. This is basically to say, we want to go forward with the plans for $954,000, and then this is for the A&E firm to go ahead and put the design out for them.
Yeah.
Now, if the board says, well, $954,000, we can't do that, then we have to go back to the drawing board. And so maybe the board would not approve this. They would maybe defer it then, but that's a board decision. That's where the board has to determine the new cost estimate is the 954, plus that doesn't include site work.
And how much are we getting from the grant?
450. 450 plus the 30 that was just for
850,000.
Yes.
Well, just reading this and not having your update, it was far less complicated.
Yes.
even at that, I had questions about this because this task order, when they asked for $17,000, we just paid them $28.
We paid them for the design. They've done the final design. That was a whole separate task order that we have already done, and that's part of that $44,000 we've already paid for A&E. Mm-hmm. That's included in that. This is completely separate for them to actually put together the bidding documents to put out on the street for an IFB to help us choose the vendor, go through all of that process, and then keep an eye on the vendor while they're building it.
What caused the $7,000?
That's what the $7,000 is.
Yeah, it's for the put the right. bid. It's for them to put together the bid package, put the bid package out, and then while construction is occurring, then they administer and oversee the construction.
Oversee the construction.
Now it's not a construction inspector; it's construction administration, which is slightly different.
Okay, why didn't they bring this to us at the beginning?
They did, and I asked them to take it out. Because I wanted to do this in pieces. Because had we approved all of it in the beginning, mm-hmm. whether or not we went forward with building the building, we would have been responsible for this part of it.
So that's why when we issue certain task orders for engineering, we try to issue it at certain like defined areas, so we're not responsible for the whole thing. So we initially issued the task order for the design. Now the design came back, and it's now almost $1 million. So that's where the board has to say, if we want to issue this task order, that's basically the board saying that we are acknowledging that we're going to move forward with $1 million cost.
And that's about $300,000 more than what we were talking about.
Yes.
Correct.
I would think that they had the plans for something like this would be boilerplate. It's not like a home.
For the most part, it kind of is. The state has a set of plans, and they're not complete plans, but they have a design that you start with. And then we are required to find an A&E firm to complete that design.
That's per the state's requirements.
Yes, that is for the state's requirements. That's why they give us that $30,000 for the A&E services.
So
it's never enough.
Yeah, and so far we've spent the $17,000, $28,000 on their design. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's never enough, and they know that that $30,000 isn't enough. Just like they know the $450,000 is never going to be enough. They expect the localities to
pick up the other half.
Pick up the rest. Yes.
So like I said, so we originally put it out for bid. It was like about $1.2 million, and then we asked them to go back to the drawing board and try and scale it back to get the cost down.
And honestly, the building that he's designed, with the exception of the concrete roof and with the exception of minor changes, it is the building that the state has on their website. They've added a couple of things, you know, hooks on the roof, you know, stuff like that, minor stuff like that they've added, and then the concrete roof. Otherwise, it is the building the state has on their website.
You know, I understand the need and understand all of the real good things. Will we be charging other people who are going to use our building? Like, if no, free.
Yep.
Okay. So it's no money making.
No.
Okay.
But in the past, didn't we go to other localities?
Yes.
To borrow their places?
Yes.
And I guess that's what bothers me a little bit. It seems like anymore, if you're inconvenienced, we have to spend this money so we won't be inconvenienced. And I know it's hard, but you know, we're talking about $1 million, half and half. We're already in debt, $96 million. Where is it going to stop? I'm sorry, but it seems to be no end to it.
The other concern is I just sat in on the Planning Commission's capital improvement plan, and the requests for this coming year, 2021, the requests were $5,765,173. And then, as we get this report every month, or we only have $2,462,000 in undesignated fund balance. And so I don't know how we're going to, this could be a really difficult
year. And I'll talk to the board later this evening about something else that I'll let you know about too, but I can't talk about it right now.
Okay.
So on this, what I would maybe say is maybe at this point, maybe we defer it right now.
I was thinking maybe we defer, give them a chance to see if they can have some cutbacks in it and save us some money and get back down close to where, because like you said, this doesn't include any site preparation, any pipes in the ground to get water over there, nothing.
Right.
So my suggestion would be to defer it, let those guys have a chance to sit together and chop it a little bit, or, you know, to make it.
How long?
You're right, it's a building that's on their website, but we might be able to use something a little bit smaller.
It is possible to go smaller. That is their prototype.
Sure, they don't. Really. They like to put out the nicest ones, and that's fine. But maybe we don't always need to have the 100% one.
And to go back to your thing, Mr. Weaver, about the traveling, I mean, I've done it. We've gone to Albemarle, we've gone to Buckingham, we've gone to Goochland. But the problem with doing that is that our resources are 45 minutes from the county if we have a fire. Now, we have other resources that we can use, but with being all volunteer, we are limited on manpower. Whereas if we're training in Fort Union, we get a call, we still respond from Fort Union.
There's all kinds of scenarios that you can draw.
Yes, sir.
And they're correct. You can't guard 100% against every variable that might exist.
I totally agree with that.
And we live the chance anyway.
Yes, sir. But I think the deferral part would probably be a good idea.
Yeah.
Let them see what they can do with it, and if they come back to us, they'll come back to us.
Do we have a certain amount of time in order to match the grant or whatever?
We are coming down to the end of the grant. I think November 14th is when we are supposed to have approval by then. We have received 2 extensions from them already.
The first meeting in November, we could make a decision. If we had to, we could ask them for an possible extension, saying, Dad, we just got the plan back. $300,000 more than what we had planned on.
And
we'd like to
get
an extension. And I think that they're going to work with us.
They have been amazing with working with us and working with our deadlines and changing those. And and really helping us trying to get through the process.
What's the length of the extensions?
The first extension we got was a year. And then just a few months ago, they just gave us another 3 months.
And every time we extend, the price goes up.
Yes. Yes.
Can't wait for losing myself. Look at it.
And this is going to a class, I forget what the different classes are. This is going to the one where we provide the accelerants.
Yes. Not,
the 1.2 million was the one that was gas.
That operated. Was gas, that's right.
So, I mean, that's why we thought it was going to be quite a bit cheaper.
Yeah.
Wow. You have to look at the whole picture.
Any other questions? Do we have a motion?
So there's two motions here. One's for a supplemental appropriation, but if you're going to defer it right now, would that to defer the first motion? Because there's two motions. One was for the project agreement, and one was for the supplemental appropriation for the dollars. If they're not going forward with the project agreement, right, and they want to just defer it, do we have to do anything with the first motion?
No.
Okay.
I move the Board of Supervisors defer project agreement number 3 between Flavanna County and Crabtree
Rohrbach
yep. and Associates, Inc. to complete the burn building bidding and construction administration services totaling $7,120 and further authorize the county administrator to execute the
I think after $7,120 okay. We can cut it off there.
$7,120 period.
Yep.
Sure. Until November.
We're going to defer it until the next meeting because
we may have to make a decision by then.
Yeah, I mean, so what's going to have to happen is I guess you're going to have to reach out to.
Yeah, I will reach out to fire programs and see what the options are for getting another extension, and we'll get the burn building committee together to hash out what they think we should do next.
Okay. Do we have a second?
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Eakin, second by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Appointments. F. Monticello Area Community Action Committee.
The two ladies that applied, the first one had been approached by MACA Outreach Director to apply for this position, and I had approached her as well, and really I knew she was interested, I pushed it forward. And then, when I talked to the MACA board person, and then Region 10, Edna Harris, who I know, she is in the class, the leadership class now. When I looked at her application, she had applied to a lot of things. So she has an opportunity to be selected for some other committees and boards. She's a teacher, she's a teacher. She's a Fluvanya, both these Fluvanya ladies. She teaches in Charlottesville. But I would like to promote Tamika Braveheart for that position.
For MACA.
It's two,
yes,
different, two different positions.
One's for Region 10, one's for MACA.
Yeah, one's for MACA.
I think we only have the one for each, right?
Yeah.
Yes, yes. So if the board wants to move forward with it is, they can just read the motion up here and then read the board, the appointees, and the terms of each one since we only have two.
All right. I move the Board of Supervisors approve the following board committee or committee appointments. Monticello Area Community Action Committee, MACA. Tamika Braveheart, Region 10 Community Services Board, Edna Carissa Harris.
And the terms.
10/16/2019 and ending 12/31/2022 and 12/31/2019. Boy, that's close.
2019. She's just filling in from one until the end of the month.
Unexpired.
It was unexpired.
Oh, okay.
All right, do we have a second?
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Booker and seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Now, with our presentation, Mr. Dahl, Mr. Rothmel, please help us out here. EdTac semi-annual presentation. Mr. Rothmel. Oh, hi, young lady.
I came up to FOIA.
Vice Chair of
Exactly. But I'll be close by.
Thank you, because I would probably break the technology.
Do you want me to move the technology?
That would be fabulous. Okay. Thank you. I tend to break those things when I touch them. Trisha Johnson, I'm vice chair of the EdTech committee, and I'm happy to represent that dynamic and very invested group of people that serve to try to bring tourism and economic development to this county. There you see the members of the EdTech commission, and you can tell that they are all people that I'm sure you're familiar with, and you know the good work they do in the community. So some of the things that we're doing, one of the projects we're working on is the Love Sign, and if you travel around Virginia, I'm sure you've seen them just about everywhere you go. This committee had the brilliant idea to work with the high school to bring this Love Sign to fruition. So we're working with the school CTE program to design and build the Love Sign that will be installed at Pleasant Grove. The engineering department for the schools will design it, ag and woodworking departments will build it, and the art department will decorate it. The idea behind this is that it will be made of some durable material yet to be determined. We're gonna let the engineers have their say on that. And then it will be painted from time to time with different themes that represent Fluvanna County. So while the sign itself will be static, the decoration of it will change periodically. So that gives the high school art students a kind of ongoing investment in this project. And we'll utilize the LoveWorks grant that Virginia Tourism Corporation offers. It's a $1,500 reimbursement grant. And it says it's a solid love sign that can be painted. And the art students already have some ideas. They're already being very creative and coming up with ideas of how to decorate those letters so that they exemplify Fluvanna County's Grow, Build, Learn, Play motif that we have going. And the picture there is Lynchburg's sign. So does anybody have any questions about this project? Pretty straightforward.
Yeah, and then just quick, this one will probably go, so if you're looking in between the high school and the road going into Pleasant Grove, they had talked about putting the love sign somewhere kind of out front in that area. Like I said, the letters would be probably, 6 feet tall, mm-hmm. roughly. So.
And a lot of people, I mean, it's obvious, too, that this is used for photography a lot. They're used for backgrounds for proms and dates and even engagement pictures and such. So it's being sited in such a way that the backdrop is gorgeous so that people will be able to take their photographs there without having stuff in the background that's not pretty.
So is
yes, ma'am.
LoveWorks. It says LoveWorks grant.
Yes, ma'am. That's from the State Department of Tourism.
Yeah, is there going to be anything else to explain the love, or is it, I mean,
it's part of the
It's a meaning.
It's part of the whole Virginia is for Lovers campaign, and these signs are everywhere. People actually take their pictures in front of them and put them up on the Virginia Tourism website. So it's kind of, there's a pretty good base of people who already understand what it is. So I think they'll get it as well.
So.
Yes,
but otherwise it's just a word.
You'd be surprised how many people take pictures of the one at 95, or on I-95.
Yeah, I know, that one, they take pictures.
And we brought the temporary one here for Old Farm Day a couple of years ago and put it in about the same place that we're talking about putting mm-hmm. this one. And I can't tell you how many people took their pictures there, but it was in the hundreds. And so those people already knew what that was for and were there doing that. So can we move on to 101 things to do in Fluvanna? How many of you can think of 101 things to do? We're curating a list. You can. And variations there. The list will be on the website. It'll be promoted on social media, included on rat cards, etc. It's an ongoing list that can change as items are added or when things are no longer happening, as new businesses crop up, they can be included. And they can also include their things on it. We currently have about 60 items with descriptions and an additional 60 that need to be written. One of the really good advantages of this
is that it provides a database for people who are handling social media for the county to reach into a folder that already exists and grab a pre-prepared, here's our one thing to do today. Maybe it's to go visit Red Rocker Candy. So there'll be a photograph of the business and information about it, and they have that already done. So the EdTech Commission will provide that to the county, and the county can then just pull it and use it under social media as needed. So it'll be a nice resource for those folks. Any questions about that? We encourage all of you, if you have any suggestions, to let us know. Certified Tourism Information Center, this is yet another fantastic use for the House of Pleasant Grove. It's close to being qualified as a Certified Tourist Information Center. EdTech will be responsible for the last step of getting brochures from every other Certified Tourist Information Center in Virginia. There are about 75 of them. That's one of the requirements. You have to have a brochure from every other one on a card rack in the center. There is room in the Pleasant Grove Museum to display that. This will enable us to be in the Virginia Welcome Centers for free, which currently is a $1,200 cost that we pay annually. So if we do this, that cost will go away. Economic Development had budgeted to pay the $1,200 in fiscal year 20, but we'll use those funds for any one-time costs that we may incur during the application process. And becoming certified also was part of the tourism strategic plan the BOS approved. No additional staff hours will be required for this. Any questions about that? I think the board off and on has been talking about that for a couple of years. So we're close, and EdTech's going to carry it over to the finish line. Any questions about us or what we do or suggestions?
One thing real quick.
Yes, sir.
I don't know, stopping at their welcome center when you cross the state line, you see brochures from Orange, you see brochures from Nelson. Maybe get out there.
We're in it, but we pay.
If we do this.
If we do this, you will.
That's right.
If you do this,
I figured out what it meant, but I was going to double check and make sure. Any other questions? Thank you so much.
Appreciate
all the work that you guys are doing.
Yes, sir. It's our pleasure.
Okay, so the last presentation, and this board can make it as quick as they want. So this is about, so tonight you have to determine what color
the outside's going to be.
Of color of the tank you want.
We're not doing the design. We're not doing outside color.
Do you have any, you did the crowdsourcing thing, and have you had this? Not a one submission yet for crowdsourcing. So we will see, but let's move forward. So you have a package there in front of you with five different types of blues that you can go with, and up at the top left corner, it tells you what the name of the blue is. So we're going to rise.
Yeah. Uh-oh.
So we kept all the logos on here the same, just so you can kind of see it with the blue. Just
Spring Creek Road. One is the last one.
Maybe one additional page, because I think the logo is slightly different.
It's slightly different, and
the
color is
whatever. So I'll tell you, unless there's something, depending on prices, staff has been a little biased to this one just because it's simple and we think it'll be affordable, but it looks a little different than some of the others. But like I said, we can go back to the old ones and we can see what else we still get by.
Size, they're biased to that one.
To this one.
But
we're just doing color right now.
Yours big in color, correct.
Okay.
So let's
stick to the color.
Yeah, let's stick to the color and let me go through these. Well, you have a question, Mr. Weaver?
Yes. Well, you're going to explain, but to me, if we're keeping a format like that, in my opinion, we're missing the most important thing of that tower. It's not on there. And what might that be? Open for business. Why wouldn't open for business be there?
We're sticking to the color right now.
Yeah, but I'm jumping the gun.
You're getting the head up.
Yeah. Moses has seconds.
No, I think that's fair.
That's a bad idea. Go ahead, Mr. Weaver.
And then, as Moses said, underneath that, you put established. What's the date?
Right there, it's established.
You can't see that, so you put that underneath.
Yeah.
You have five words, is all you need on it.
I was going to say. Leave it like that, and you put your mind right on the bottom.
Yes.
Open for business, right across the bottom.
Isn't that what we're doing? Okay.
So let me breeze through these colors and you can decide where you want to go. So the first tank's clear sky. The second tank is a lighter one. It's a baby blue. And remember, the board said they wanted some type of lighter blue color. Fourth tank's called heavenly blue, and it's like a grayish blue color. Let's see here. The next one's spring water. And then the last one is horizon blue. Now, if none of those different variations of blue suit the board, we can go to the website and you can choose.
I think we've already chosen.
I think that horizon first, but I'd like your comment about we can all these use every bit of the help we can get.
I think we like horizon.
Does the board like horizon?
Yeah, is that what
horizon.
Saying? I like horizon. Yeah.
So
and I like open business too.
Yeah.
I mean, who can say no to VACO recognized longevity measure?
Yeah. What do you think about that?
Put your stamp on anything you can want.
Come see Mr. Weaver.
Yes. You
know.
Keep you in business.
That's right.
So then,
as long as you can cut the expenses.
That's right.
So then it seems like the overwhelming majority says go with Horizon Blue. We'll give this color to the contractor. So once the tank's finished, then they'll probably start painting in the beginning of November. So this is the color that's going on the tank. At the next meeting on November 6th, we'll come back with logo options. Hopefully we have more to provide you. If not, there are some of the other ones that we've provided before. I'm still looking to get some different cost estimates. I'm trying to get the cost estimate for this one specifically. This is probably gonna be closer to the $15,000 to $30,000 range. But anyway, like I said, that's next week. So Horizon Blue it is, and we'll move forward with it. And that's all I have as far as presentation.
Thank you very much. All right, next one will be the consent agenda. J, minutes of elected officials breakfast October 1st, 2019, Ms. Solis. K, minutes of October 2nd, 2019, Ms. Solis. L, FY20, DMV, U.S. Department of Transportation, Highway Safety Fund Grant Award, Mr. Dave Wells. M, proclaiming October Breast Cancer Awareness Month, Mr. Dahl. N, CRMF PW20003 equipment, Dale Kreitcher. O, CRMF PW20-005 additional dog park erosion control costs, Ms. McIver. T, FY20 FCPS grant supplemental appropriation, Ms. McIver. And Q, accounts payable report for September 2019, Ms. Twisdale. Is anything needs to be pulled?
You want to go first, or you want me to go first? Or somebody else?
Go ahead.
Okay, let's look at N. I'm going to go through several of these. N. $14,000 from capital reserve maintenance to pay for the cost. What exactly, how much did this cost to begin with? To me, that seems like a mighty big figure.
Mr. Hickman, would you come up? So this is basically, and he can answer the more specific questions, but this is to repair two pieces of equipment. It's to repair a John Deere backhoe and a Bobcat mini excavator. There's fuel and electrical systems with each one of them. What's the split of the cost for each repair? Do you have a ballpark?
For the John Deere backhoe, it was just over $5,000. The mini excavator was over $8,000.
And I think the mini excavator, that's the one that we purchased.
For $57,000, I think.
I think it was in the $50,000.
$50,000.
And when did we purchase that?
With leftover money.
2 years ago.
2 years ago.
And we already have, that's the question.
No guarantee.
Yeah. But it seems to me, you know, it's only 2 years old, some of it. Yeah, no warranty, and he had $14,000?
That's for two pieces of equipment.
Hey,
could you tell me what's wrong with
it? What happened to the equipment?
Yeah.
The backhoe is very old. I think it's a 1985. It had a couple failures in the fuel system, and anytime you have to work on that piece of equipment, it's expensive. At the same time, the Mini also broke down. The fuel pump, the in injectors had to be replaced. Each injector is over $800. It's very expensive. And it's just a temperamental piece of equipment. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And that's the one that's 2 years old?
Could be more than that. I know Mr. Stevens came to us.
I want to say it's 3-4 years old.
I thought I remembered. That's the reason.
This part is not in warranty.
Isn't this sort of unusual cost?
It is expensive.
Yes.
Well, you just take your car to get some repairs and see how much it costs.
I try to avoid that as much as possible.
The problem with these pieces is you have to have very specific.
That's right.
Yes, you have to go back to the. We have to go back to Bobcat. They have to use their software to repair it. It's just not something you bring anybody
on. Right. Then you use them a lot. Do you use the equipment a lot?
Yes, we do. It is a vital piece of equipment. Both those pieces are what our utilities department uses, and at the same time, both pieces were down.
The original.
Whereabouts in the county do you use this equipment?
The both of them are used in the Fork Union area. All the water lines have to be dug up if there's a leak. Mostly used in that area.
Is that charged to them in that district?
So remember, when we combined all of the kind of utilities and the public utilities, there is a shared cost for certain percentage based upon. So you remember, we allocated costs based upon the percentages and size of each of the utility systems: the sewer system, the Fuzzy system, the Zions Crossroads system when it's completed, and then the county also has its own water kind of sewer systems that serve this building here, serve Pleasant Grove. So we allocate certain costs to each enterprise fund. So some of these costs. It's going to go to the public utilities thing, but there are expenses that get allocated to each fund, specifically Fuzzy and all those.
So you're allocating that thing, yep. Per se. You're still doing that.
Yep.
Okay, that's what I was wondering, basically, here, that much money. It just seemed, and I thought that it wasn't too long ago that we had done something like, you said, what, 3 or 4 years maybe?
Well, like you said, that's the part that the warranty did not.
Yeah, and remember, some of the equipment we have is old equipment. The backhoe is, what did you say, 1985?
I'd say we got our money out of it.
Yeah.
Did we get our money out of it?
Mm-hmm. It's been here longer than you.
You probably have proven it.
We probably
have. You got any money
no more right there.
There you go.
And believe me, if any of that equipment could have been fixed by Willis and Roger, they would fix it.
There you go.
I just want to know where I'm on the list to have the pool dug out of my house. You know,
I know it's a long list.
We got to build our pool first.
Yeah, no, I thought it was a long list. Mm-hmm.
What you got to Sandy Beach pool?
Do you want anything, or you want me to continue?
Go ahead.
Tab out the next one. We spent $4,900 in maintenance costs. For excavation there at Pleasant Grove Dog Park. My question there is, was that hired out or did we do it ourselves?
So let me correct something here. So if you remember, it's at the trail there. It's not at the dog park. It's the trail that goes down to Sandy Beach.
The one down below that.
It's the one below the dog park. So after all the years, after the last year of rain that we had, where we had all that rain, a lot of the gravel, a lot of the trail washed out.
Yeah.
There was a grant that the county got to put that in at some time. So this was pre-Mr. Hickman that this was done. So the original bid was put out. It was, I think, around $12,000 that was approved in a CRM previously. After they got it to start doing the work, there were additional changes that had to be made to fix some erosion controls on the trail itself. So it was an additional almost $5,000.
But in theory, those changes are so that it doesn't erode.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. In the future.
And then who did that then?
That was a contractor.
You did. So we couldn't have done that ourselves. That's what I was wondering too.
Probably not, no.
Yeah, well, that was basically my question. Yeah. If we do it in-house, you're usually going to get it cheaper.
No, I mean, that I don't want to speak on Mr. Hickman's behalf, but I would say some of that
there may be little components that could be, but when you have a job like that, you just do one thing, and you know, we don't have the manpower to, you know, put five guys off of this for a whole week to do the job. So
we try to do as much in-house as possible at all times, mm-hmm. and then go outside with a contractor.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was wondering.
We do.
Thank you, sir.
Anything else?
Yes. Let's look at P. I'm going right down. Philip.
Have you covered Mrs. Lee Eager's also?
Yeah, he's already answered my questions.
IP, when we look down through, it's a grant for $33,364.
Yep.
Why did we add another $2,000 in there for local? Because at the end of the year, they have hundreds of thousands of dollars. And why was that added in to make that total of $35,000?
So if you look at this chart here, you've got local, county, and then you have other local. So the schools get grants. Some are state grants, some are federal grants, some may be local grants. It's not money coming from the county. It may be like a local type of foundation grant, like a Walmart grant. They have grants like that. So it's not state money. It's sometimes it may be a corporate grant or something like that. So this is the $2,000 is not county local money. It's another type of local grant. So they got some additional funding after the budget was approved, and they're just.
So this really isn't.
This is not county money.
No. Oh, okay. That's super. That's super. Yeah. I only had two questions on the.
All right, just put it there. It's your turn.
Let's see if we can find what we're looking for.
30 years, still earning this deep.
That's right. One line you go. Rip Van Winkle. On 48, on the bills, please. So that's Robinson Farmer and Cox.
Uh-huh.
It's $3,600.
That's the cost allocation plan for social services.
For special services.
Social services.
So every year, RFC does a cost allocation plan. What they do, they determine how much of what we provide for social services is a direct and indirect cost. This cost allocation plan with this, we then submit it to the states and feds, and then they reimburse the county a certain dollar amount based upon what types of benefits and what types of indirect costs the county provides to support social services. We get about roughly $90,000 back in cost allocation funds from the feds based upon this cost allocation plan.
We give some back to the social services. One third.
Yep.
And it raises another question, and maybe you've already done it, and maybe you're already in the mode now. Have we gone out for bids for them? I think I brought that up last year when I saw their name on here, or are we?
We did go out for bids for them, and we have them one more year.
Yep. So
year.
Mm-hmm. So we're doing. It's a contract with 5 1-year renewals.
Now we are in year four after this audit that their finance is in right now. Mm-hmm. There will be one more year with RFC before we go out to a new RFP. Mm-hmm.
And then 353. Then you won't have to put up with me too much.
Oh, it's okay.
$2,493 for work boots.
You have those guys.
Can you tell me? You know, so there's an invoice for Gardner Shoes of Charlottesville, Public Works Boots for $2,400 and some change.
The canvas supplies, work boots for all the Public Works employees, steel-toed boots, mm-hmm. and annually they pay for those boots for all the employees.
How many pairs of boots do you buy?
I'm going to say, I can't tell you exactly.
So we have, if you figure we have 8, 10, you've got custodial, you've got grounds crew, you've got public works employees, you have public utilities employees, so I'm going to say at minimum.
And that's a safety.
10 to 15?
Yeah, he said 30.
30 pairs. Do you take bids on something like that or not, or is it, you can't even find them probably?
This is a small purchase.
Small purchase, right.
You're getting steel toe boots for under $100?
They're not good.
You got a pretty good price.
Yes, but they can be very expensive.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And do you get those kind that you can take back to the company and they can redo something to them?
Can they resole them or do something? Or
that is correct. This is through Red Wing, and they do service the
right,
boots for
them. Right, they service the boots.
Right.
Yeah,
that's
nice.
Thank you. Yeah.
And here's what's expected.
Yeah, they are Red Wing.
And I just wondered, 601 to 609, the Nevada County School System is getting money from CSA, and I would think that the Nevada school system wouldn't charge CSA for teaching, or it says community services.
Yeah, we paid the Fluvanna County school system. Do you know?
I don't. No, actually, I have to check with our CSA coordinator.
What number is that?
601 to 609.
It's for 4E services. I'll have to check with our.
Yeah, I just wondered because I thought that the school system should be providing the services to CSA.
And it's coming out of the CSA budget.
Coming out of the CSA budget.
So I'll check that out and get back to you.
No. I don't know. It's about
$1,500 at the most.
Yep.
Okay, it must be something.
Yeah, we'll find out what it is.
Yeah, it's not enough clarity there. That's our figure. What it has something to do with kids' service, I'm sure.
I think it's something about the school thing, but I'm not sure.
Yes, ma'am, I know.
But the one thing you have to remember, if CSA is paying for this,
right,
then we get state funding. We get a state match, whereas if the county was just paying for something, or...
That's very good.
Right, and the board has to approve every penny.
Correct.
So sometimes,
Ms. Twisdale was saying, and like I said, I don't know that this is 100%. Maybe it was for some after-school program for one of the kids.
I'll find out.
And then, so they're paying, and then therefore the state's going to reimburse the county the certification.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like a learning program.
Because there is a school person involved in that now.
We have
that's
to be
true.
People to pick
you're
kids
right.
up after school. And
yep, you're right. We need to read that as well.
And they're going out and doing things with them.
So we'll get you the exact answer, and we'll email more and let you know what that's for.
Thank you. Okay. You ready for a motion?
I absolutely am, sir.
Mr. Chair, I move the accounts payable and payroll be ratified for September 2019 in the amount of $3,759,231.38.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Is there any unfinished business? Is there any new business? All right, if not, I will now open the second round of public comment. Anyone wishing to address the board, please come to the witness chair, state your name and address, take the comments in 5 minutes, on topic and directed to the board. Is anyone wishing to speak to the board at this time? Thank you. And seeing none, I will now close. Second round of public comment, Mr. O'Brien.
Mr. Chair, I move the Nevada County Board of Supervisors enter into a closed meeting pursuant to the provisions of Section 2.2-3711A6 and Section 2.2-3711A19 of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended for the purposes of discussing investment of funds and public safety.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mrs. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. We're now in closed
session. Mr. Chair, I move the closed meeting be adjourned and the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors convene again in open session. Be it resolved, the Board of Supervisors does hereby certify that to the best of each member's knowledge, only public business matters lawfully exempted from open meeting requirements under Section 2.2-3711-8, the Code of Virginia 1950, as amended, and only such public business matters as were identified in the motion of which the closed meeting was convened, were heard, discussed, or considered in the meeting. Supervisors, who makes the motion on that?
You made the motion. Do I have a second? Mr. Weaver made the motion. Ms. Booker has seconded it.
Okay.
And now, Ms. Eager? Ms. Eager?
Okay, go ahead.
Mr. Weaver?
Aye.
Ms. Booker? Chair votes aye. We're 4-0. Mr. O'Brien had to leave. He's absent.
Yeah.
Do we have? Do we have a meeting to a motion to adjourn? Do we have a second?
Second.
Yeah. Motion made by Ms. Booker, seconded by Ms. Seeger. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0. Mr. O'Brien, being gone. Thank y'all.
Thank you.